You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, this is Gavin from the Art of Crime podcast. Katie and Nathan wanted me to let you know that they use some pretty spicy language on this show. So if that's not your jam or you have kids in the room, this might not be for you. Whatever the case, if you want to learn more about outstanding women in history, you should check out the latest season of The Art of Crime. It's a deep dive into the life and times of Madame Tussauds, one of the most celebrated showwomen of the 19th century. If you're sticking around for Queens, have a blast.
Hi, this is Katie.
And this is Nathan.
And you're listening to Queens Podcast, the show about badass women in history. Well, hello, Nathan.
Well, hello.
Oh, hello. I'm so good to see you today.
What accent was that?
I don't know. It just came out. I don't know. No idea. The voice just moved me, and here we are. Here we are. Back to talk about Dagmar of Denmark, part 3.
Here we are. Talk about Dagmar.
What you drinking over there?
Just my usual. I love a good michelada on a weekend.
Oh, give me a cold one. Yeah. Well, I'm being very basic, and I am drinking Truly's out of a little rubber ducky tumbler. So, cheers, bitches. Nathan, before we get started, let's give some of our Patreon supporters a shout out. How does that sound?
Yeah.
Yes. Shout out to Patreon supporters, Marilyn, Sarah, Justice, and Natalia.
Also, shout out to Amelia, Chelsea, and Annette.
Yes, thank you to, well, thank you to all of our Patreon supporters, and also thank you to any of our listeners or followers or anything at any level. You are all a very welcome, and we're so happy you're here. Before we get started, let's talk about on Spotify. Did you know you can now go and leave comments on episodes, and then the creators can decide if they want to publish those comments or not? Did you know about this feature, Nathan?
No, I did not.
Well, we got a comment that said we were very fake and trashy.
I agree.
Point to the lie. But I am in the process of designing some very fake and trashy merch.
Yeah.
Listeners, if you are listening on Spotify and you want to comment on episodes, we love this. We can't wait to see what you have to say. And keep your eyes peeled on our merch store for some very fake and trashy content popping up there. So, Nathan, let's be very fake and trashy and go ahead and bring our horrible opinions out into the world. How about that?
What has ever stopped us before?
Nothing. Hard nothing. Nathan, where did we last leave Dagmar of Denmark in her second part episode?
Her beloved husband, Alexander III, aka Sasha Fierce, had just died. And now her eldest son, Nicholas, is czar. And little Nicky Poo,
he's not ready.
He's not that prepared. Yeah, he ain't ready. He ain't ready to be czar. And Dagmar is a little nervous about it. And she's also a little bit nervous because he's made this decision to marry a woman named Alexandra, who she is definitely not approving of.
Uh-uh. She does not get the Dagmar stamp of approval. We have an episode on Alexandra Fyodorovna. I'll link to it in the show notes, so go check that out if you like. Anyway, Let's talk about why Dagmar didn't really approve of her new daughter-in-law. Alexandra Fyodorovna didn't have the right kind of temperament, or at least in Dagmar's mind. She did not have the right kind of temperament to be Empress of Russia. She's a bit shy. She's a bit moody. When she doesn't get her way, she kind of throws temper tantrums. At least this is, you know, everybody's going to have different views, but that's Dagmar's view of, like, she's a child, basically. And these aren't personality traits. Like, Dagmar was a very popular empress of Russia. And she's like, girl, you are setting yourself up for failure coming in here acting like that.
Oh, God. But do you think any of this got better after her son's wedding? Y'all, we don't have any official record of Dagmar ever saying anything negative about her daughter-in-law or anything.
Right.
But let's just put it this way. These two women were not friends.
Mm-mm. They couldn't have been more different either. Dagmar is bubbly and outgoing. And even in times when she doesn't want to be, she knows it's her job to be seen and heard by the people. She loved to go to parties and socialize, or at least she was good at going to parties. Like, her husband just died. She probably doesn't want to be going to state events, but she knows she has to. These are all traits that, in her mind, make a good empress. See and be seen. These people are paying tax dollars for you to be out here. You gotta be out there, you know?
Maybe some advice that should have been taken. Spoiler alert.
Whereas Alexandra is reserved. I think Alexandra Fyodorovna suffered from extreme anxiety issues.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
She preferred to stay home, keep to herself, and the Russian nobility and the Russian people, like just the general people, kind of viewed it as, does she think she's too good for us? You think you're better than me?
I can see how that could come across in the loud, boisterous, fun, over-the-top Russian court. You have this shy, demure girl. It's like, no, but the women are supposed to love parties because that's how Dagmar was. You know, she was fun. Yeah. She was bubbly. They are so different. They are so different. Because Alexander's like reserved, keeping to herself. She preferred not to go to all these parties, but these parties were being thrown for her.
And I wonder why people thought she was snobby.
Yeah, right? We're throwing this party for you and you don't want to go. So yeah, snobby. Snobby, yeah. McSnobberson.
And if she went, she would be like quiet and not talk to anybody. And it's just like, she was just raised at a different, like with a different culture. But also, yeah, I think she had anxiety issues.
And honestly, Dagmar didn't really do anything to make the relationship with her daughter-in-law better. In Russia, the Dowager Empress is allowed to keep the crown jewels, to drip in jewels a la Guanza for the rest of her life. But it was kind of expected that once there's a new empress, you hand over the jewels to the new empress, right?
Yeah, Nicholas calls up Dagmar. Hey, Mom, can you send over those jewels to Alexandra? And she is like, who is this? I'm sorry, you have the wrong number. And I feel like that could have been like some kind of peace offering or something like that.
Yeah, olive branch, if you will.
And so she did eventually send over some of the jewels, but it was all the ones that were like uncomfortable to wear or just really, really out of style.
Oh, ouch. That's just like rubbing salt in the wound.
I know. So you know how her sister is Queen of England. So when her sister's husband dies in England, it is the custom that the Dowager Queen sends the new queen all the crown jewels. And Dagmar was just like, just don't send them. Her sister is like, I have to. It's a different custom here. And Dagmar is like, what are they going to do? Shoot you? No, just keep them. I love her.
This is great.
I know.
This is just a big time for changes for Dagmar. Yeah. She's no longer empress. She's learning to live without her husband. Huh. But there's one thing that did change a little bit, and that was her approach to politics, because after her husband died, he was the political savvy one, so she kind of was like, gotta do it now.
Well, when they were married, she was just sort of like, he knows what the fuck he's doing. He knows this realm more than I do. I'm going to focus on raising our children, and I'm going to focus on my charity. But after Sasha's death, Nicholas, like, told her straight up, this is a direct quote, I'm not yet ready to be czar. I know nothing about the business of ruling. So she felt like it was now her responsibility to educate herself on political stuff.
I mean, makes sense.
Not a great sign, though, also.
Yeah, not a great sign that your son is like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And she becomes Nicholas's top advisor, which means for the first time in her life, she's actually looking at politics with a critical eye. And she's like, things are kind of off here. Maybe we need to get on that Reformation station and take off on that train.
Reformation station, choo-choo. Yeah, because Dagmar's husband's politics had been very, very conservative. Russia for Russia. No constitution, absolute monarchy, no parliament, fuck them peasants, and so on and so on.
But now she actually has to look at the political landscape, and she's like, oh no.
Oh, honey, no.
We gotta tread a little bit lightly. And at this point, she steps in and starts giving her son a lot more liberal advice than maybe his dad would have given him.
Yeah.
Right?
We're going to fast forward a little bit. It's 2 years later, and they're finally having Nicholas and Alexandra's coronation. And because it is Mother Russia, motherfucker, all of their coronations are always very over the top. But it kind of feels like Nicholas is overcompensating, like he knows he's not a strong ruler. So you know how the trope is that the guys with the big trucks have very tiny penises?
Oh.
Nicholas was like, this coronation needs to be the biggest coronation, the glitziest, glamorous, the most gold, dripping in jewels coronation that Russia has ever seen. Which maybe might come back to bite them at some other point, but... Right. So that's what they are. It's 2 years later. They're setting up for this just decked out coronation.
And the coronation happened on May 26th in Moscow. The royal couple arrived on May 6th to, you know, normal-ish fanfare. Like, yay, look at them.
Cool.
They look so great.
Maybe a banner or two. Maybe, like, they signed a couple autographs. Just normal.
Normal. But then... Yeah. When Dagmar shows up 2 days later, the crowd loses their shit.
Dowager! Dowager! Dowager!
There's banners galore, there's trumpets, there's all sorts of fanfare. People are going nuts, and she is eating it up with a spoon, honey.
Is this for me?
She's a Sag. She's a Sagittarius.
She's a Sagittarius. That's all you need
like,
to say.
Oh, no, this fanfare? Oh, for little old me?
Little old me? No, stop.
Stop. Stop. No,
keep going,
you
keep
stop.
Going. Please keep going.
No, yeah. Keep going.
Right. And then on the day of the coronation, so Nicholas arrives in his carriage first, and the crowd's like, woo! Dagmar arrives in the second carriage, and everyone lost their shit. It is like Beatlemania. Woo! And then Alexandra arrives in the third carriage. And by that point, people have like, well, left. Like, I know. Like, the three people that were still there were like, oh, okay. Yeah.
So,
I mean, Dagmar didn't do that, but how savage.
Yeah, I can just see Alexander being like, God damn it. But we don't have time to go into it a great deal. But a few days after the coronation was an event that was a little bit of a sign of things to come within Nikki's reign.
Yeah.
It's called the Kodinka tragedy. And it was supposed to be this celebration of the coronation. And it turned out to be a disaster when up to 1,400 people were trampled to death. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. And just as many people were severely injured. Yeah, we talked about this more in depth in our Alexandra Fyodorovna episode. And in the show notes, I have a link to a YouTube video about it if anybody wants to learn more about that. But yeah, it kind of set the tone for the royal couple's entire reign. It was just a bad way to set the tone. And the royal couple's reaction to the disaster is something people still debate to this day. It was kind of viewed as very, like, they still went to a party that night kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, bad look. It's a bad look.
It was a very, very bad look. Though, I did go down a little bit of a rabbit hole about this. So they went to a party. 1,400 people were trampled to death.
Yeah.
It happened, and they went to the hospitals, and they saw the people. But what mainly got reported is that afterwards, the French ambassador was throwing them a party that night, and they still went to the party. But the French ambassador had, like, transformed this one palace to be, like, things that couldn't be recreated a couple of days later. You know, like, it may have actually been a PR nightmare on the global stage if they hadn't gone to this lavish party this dude was throwing for them. They were kind of against a rock and a hard place, but...
Yeah.
We don't have any information about how Dagmar reacted to the tragedy, but Nathan, so far, and everything we've learned about Dagmar of Denmark, what do you think?
Complete speculation? I think now that you put it at the way that, hey, if you don't do this, then the French court is going to go crazy and then it's going to be a global thing. I'm on the fence now.
Yeah.
But to her defense, she's pro-Russia. She's very pro-Russia. So I think she maybe would have been like, hey, maybe you shouldn't do this.
Yeah. Well, because also remember she was very involved in the Red Cross.
Hmm.
And so I bet she would have been thinking about that, being like, these people are in hospitals. They don't want to hear about you celebrating, because she was in hospitals a lot with her involvement in the Red Cross.
So she would have known how it would have been. So, yeah. No, that makes sense. But complete speculation.
Complete speculation, because we have nothing to document how she felt about this. I think she was Nicholas's top advisor right now, but he didn't always listen to her. I think she probably said reschedule the party, even if it's a toned down party. But again, we're just going off vibes.
Yes, all vibes.
Which could be another tagline for this show. No facts, just vibes.
So Dagmar is doubling down now on pushing her son to adopt these more liberal-minded policies. She knew her son just simply did not have that personality to rule like her husband did with that iron fist.
Yeah.
And if they didn't get ahead of this popularity game, it could spell trouble.
Yeah, because he was not. He got the nickname Bloody Nicholas after this.
Ooh,
so she's like, hey, maybe let's give the peasants some rights, or things could go bad. Okay, well, that was a lot for just the first 2 years of her son's rule. I want to take a quick break and top off my drink, and then we will be right back.
Yes.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Hello, everyone. You may recognize me as Gabby from the History of Everything podcast.
And my name is Bruna, and you don't recognize me from anything yet.
Together, we're two scientists who explore all of the weird little questions and conspiracies of the universe in our new podcast, Mystery of Everything. Everything has an explanation.
We hope.
But that is what we're here to figure out. We will dive into the science behind many popular conspiracy theories, such as vaccines causing autism, flat earth theory. And was the moon landing fake? And if so, why the heck would anyone even do that?
But it's not just conspiracies. There's a lot of cool mysteries that we will attempt to use science to explain, such as near-death experiences, what made the Vikings go berserk, and can I control my co-host with MK Ultra?
Wait, what? Anyway, make sure to check out the Mischief Everything podcast everywhere where you find your podcasts.
Okay, we are back.
Yes, and we're back to talk about some more drama, because drama. Nicholas wasn't Dagmar's only child that she was worried about, because her second son George was a little bit sickly. It seemed like he was getting better, but then he died suddenly of tuberculosis in 1899.
Poor baby. Dagmar was absolutely heartbroken. And she did not hide it at all, which I found interesting, because a lot of times when we talk about royalty, they're very like, don't show your emotions. That was not Dagmar of Denmark's course of action at any point in her life. And at George's funeral, she was so grief stricken that they had to like physically carry her out because they thought she was going to pass out. And then she did pass out in the carriage. And it reminded me, remember when in the first episode, her fiance died and she was like, she wouldn't let go of the body. They had to like physically remove her from letting go of his body. So this is very on brand for her.
If you look back in history, like we've seen with Elizabeth II when Princess Diana died, and whenever you see royalty died, they stoic. Are stoic as fuck. So it's really interesting that Dagmar didn't do that. And to me, it's like, did she purposefully be like, over the top, like you see at the Irish funerals, you know, where they're over the top, wailing and all that.
Yeah,
I think it was her natural reaction. I don't think it was a show at all.
Interesting. I think it was probably a little bit of both. I think it was a calculated choice to let people see her genuine feelings.
That's, I mean, it makes sense. But those feelings are still genuine.
Of her remaining kids, they're all stressing her out a little bit. Her son, Michael, insisted on marrying his mistress, which was a huge scandal because she was a commoner. But she'd been his mistress for like a really long time. So it's kind of romantic, I think. And then her youngest daughter, Olga, was petitioning for a divorce, which back in the late 1800s, a divorce?
Yeah.
Excuse me? But she had married this guy that was probably gay. And he had just married her for her money. And now he's like in debt, gambling all the time.
And
she wanted to divorce him to marry a commoner. And she's just like, what the fuck? Why are all my kids out here wanting to marry commoners? What the fuck is going on?
Right? This is not what you're supposed to be doing at this time.
No!
So, even though Dagmar didn't approve of her daughter's divorce and remarriage, Dagmar and one of her son-in-laws were the only people from the royal family that actually attended that wedding, which kind of says to me that, yeah, she doesn't agree with it, but she's still going to support you.
So let's get back to Nikki and Alexandra. Up to this point, they had four daughters.
Yeah.
But because of sexism, they needed a boy, otherwise, get the fuck out of here. Mm-hmm. You know, like, what are we going to do? Let a woman rule? When has that ever been successful? Catherine the Great?
It's so true. It's so true. Her name was the Great.
But anyway, they finally had a boy in 1904.
And this is a turning point for Dagmar in the Russian government, because after this, Nicholas started to ask for his mom's opinion less and less, and she's starting to get invited to meetings less and less, and Nicholas is now a lot more reliant on his wife's opinions and less on his mom's, which really didn't help with his popularity.
Because look, I love that Nicholas and Alexandra loved each other so fiercely, but it kind of made them blind
to
so much else.
100%.
Unfortunately, the son that they had, Alexei, was sick. He had hemophilia, which there's no cure for. Is there a cure for it now? Like, I don't know.
I think
we can Google it real quick.
There is no cure for hemophilia.
There's probably treatments now.
Treatments to clot your blood because that's essentially.
Yeah, hemophilia is a disease where your blood doesn't clot. I feel like a lot of famous historians have said that the Russian family had some bad news bears here with hemophilia.
I think that is a direct quote, actually.
I think that's a direct quote. I'm pretty sure. In edit, insert famous historian name here, said that.
So Dagmar and the rest of the family were like, hey, you just need to tell the Russian people that what's going on with your son. The people will have sympathy for you. They'll be praying in masses for you at the churches. You don't have to do this on your own. You can be public about it. It'll help your image a little bit, you know.
And let's discuss that. Because Alexandra was so private, I feel like if she would have come forward and been like, yeah, my son has an incurable disease, I feel like the people would have given her grace for wanting to stay home all the time.
Yeah, well, they would have known what's happening because they do the opposite of that, obviously.
That's not what they did.
Yeah, and it didn't go over well. So obviously, I think it would have helped if the public would have known why they were acting that way and why they weren't bringing the son out as much. Because leaving that big old question mark makes so much more speculation and drama, and like, instead of just being upfront,
because people are going to make up wild stories.
Yep. Exactly.
So Nicholas and Alexander decided to never make any kind of public statement about what was going on with their son and the heir to the Russian throne. The gossip in Russia was running rampant. It was like, what's wrong with the Tsarevich? Does he have two heads? Did he already die? Speculation was running crazy, and I feel like if they would have just come forward and been like, he has an incurable disease, but we have the best doctors in the world, it would have granted them grace, it would have granted them public sympathy, but that's, instead, they just hid him away and let people speculate. So the people of Russia are just like, what the fuck is happening? And they're just giving them nothing, darling.
Nothing. This is about the time that Dagmar was like, you know what? I've done what I can. I've given them my advice, but y'all definitely are taking it. So time to retire. I've seen a lot of people do that in my work life.
You know what? She deserves a retirement.
Yeah.
At this point, she's got 1904, 1905. She's like, math. She's in her 50s. Mm-hmm. She's in her 50s, probably coming up on her late 50s. She's been working since she was 18. And if I'm not wanted here, I'll hit the road. I don't blame her.
And by on the road, she got on a boat.
Oh, yeah. The boat road. The ocean.
The boat road. The ocean.
As some scientists call it.
The boat road. So she hops on a boat and he goes on the boat road and goes to Denmark.
So this is Dagmar entering her wanderlust era because she goes to all these places that she's never really gotten to go before. She's like, I'm going to see Europe. She spends some time in Finland and acts as a goodwill ambassador for Russia and like talks about, hey, how can we have better relationships? She visits her brother in Greece and, like, meets her, or spends more time with her, like, nieces and nephews and stuff there.
Yeah, and she goes to England for 3 months, which was the longest time someone from the Russian royal family ever stayed in Great Britain, BT dubs. But wasn't for happy reasons, because her sister had been Queen Alexandra of England for many, many years, and then her husband died, Edward VII, in 1910.
This is that you just don't give her the jewels. What are they going to do? Put you in prison? Era.
Yes.
These two sisters really had such a beautiful relationship. And Dagmar wanted to be there for her sister. Because remember, when Sasha died, her sister was there for her for a few months. And so she wanted to return the favor. Sadly, it wasn't quite the same. Her sister Alexandra, I'm trying to think of the language to say it, because she wasn't losing her mind, but she also wasn't the picture of mental stability.
No, I mean,
her mental health was deteriorating.
Like, it
happens.
Sometimes your physical health deteriorates, and sometimes your emotional health deteriorates, depending on the circumstance, especially when your husband dies.
Has just died. So it wasn't, like, a fun trip to England. Because London was a lot like St. Petersburg, in that the royal family is always on display. Where have we talked about before that they can go and, like, let their hair down and not always be the center of attention?
Denmark!
So they hop back over to their hometown, and they buy a cute little summer house, and I love this for them.
At their palace in Denmark, the two sisters lived in a quiet life for a few months. They'd cook their own dinners, make their own beds, just go for walks, read books, invite friends over, like normal stuff. She got to chill out for a minute. But she's still keeping on top of what was going on in Russia. Though a lot of what she's hearing is really stressing her the fuck out, because there's one thing that's, like, really pissing her off that's out in the news, is that this rando creepy dude who seems to have some weird hold on her daughter-in-law and their son.
It's this weird little holy man, and his name is Dum Dum Dum
Rasputin.
Russian queen.
Or in the dark of the night.
In the dark of the night, a little Berber. Yes, yes, Rasputin, that creepy looking motherfucker. So the Tsar and Tsarina are convinced that this quote unquote holy man, who his whole thing is like, we have to sin, so Jesus has something to forgive.
not great advice.
That's an opinion. This quote-unquote holy man is healing their son. He had the royal couple by the balls. Like, they would do whatever he said. I do feel for them there. They have one son, and it's like the entire future of the country, and he's so sick. That, yeah, if some guy shows up and is like, I heal your son, no problem. They're like, woo, okay, you know, I get it. But Dagmar's very, very worried about this. Actually, let me rephrase that. Russia is very, very worried about this. Like, the general population is just like, who the fuck is this dude? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people thought that he was sleeping with the Empress, too. And again, since they are not ever making any public, they could help their situation by being like, nope, just our son is sick and this is their doctor. And like, yep,
exactly. Exactly. If they were just transparent about the whole situation.
But instead they're like, no. So rumors are just.
Yeah. Like, oh.
It's getting out of control.
Yeah, it is getting out of control. But fun fact.
Yeah.
Is Dagmar may have met Rasputin on her trips back home between her travels. But.
Maybe.
We don't know for sure, because
we don't.
Rasputin was always by the side of the Empress, only fueling the rumors. And when Dagmar came to court, she was more often seen with her son or her grandkids, and she was never seen with Alexandra, which, again, does not help the whole situation.
No, these women hated each other so much. I know there's no, like, official record to point to, but women's intuition. These fucking women hated each other so much.
Not facts, just vibes.
Just vibes. We don't read books. We just look at pictures and go, I think this is what happened. This is the vibes I get.
No, it's not. Please don't let people think that.
I spend a very long time researching all of this.
We do.
We spend a very long time researching. Anyway, so Dagmar wrote about her daughter-in-law in a letter to a friend. My poor daughter-in-law does not perceive that she is ruining the dynasty and herself. We are powerless to ward off this misfortune, which is sure to come. So that is uncomfortably accurate. Don't Google it.
Don't do it. Google don't it. Do it. Don't Google it. So we are going to do a little bit of skimming, because the next few years are a lot of the same and a lot of the same topics that we've covered before in the show. So Dagmar does some traveling, but it's stressed out the whole time because her son's ruling is on her mind. And meanwhile, Nicholas is not helping the situation because he keeps doing stuff that really pisses people off.
Yeah. He's already got the nickname Bloody Nicholas. And now there's an event that's gone down in history called Bloody Sunday, where there's like a peaceful protest and the Imperial Guards just murder. You know, it was a bad, bad look. And Nicholas did nothing for PR damage control.
So Russia enters into a very unpopular war with Japan, in which Japan hands their asses to them. Yeah. And Dagmar sets up hospitals and does charity for all the fallen soldiers. So she's leaning into that Red Cross vibe. She's continuing to be popular while her son, not so much.
And then in 1914, this little known scrimmage called World War One breaks out.
Oh, it was a scrimmage for, what was the other one? It's so hard to remember. World War
One. You got your World War Ones, you got your World War Twos. Yeah. So Dagmar was actually in England when World War One broke out. Nicholas writes and he's like, you got to get back to Russia. So she hightails it back to Russia. But Germany wouldn't let her train pass through. And as we've already noted, not in this episode, but the previous episode, she fucking hates Germans. Mm. And so she's just like, no, I have an actual reason to hate the Germans. Because in case anybody's unfamiliar, World War One, Russia and Germany were enemies.
Yes.
And so she had to then derail her train to go up to Denmark and go through Finland and like do like a long route to get back to Russia.
Yeah. To me, that shows a lot of dedication because she's like, I need to get home. I need to go. Yeah. Bravery. Like she knows.
Because she could have stayed in England.
Yeah.
She would have been welcome to stay in England.
Yeah. But she needs to help her son because she's the good vibes. And the son's
the vibe queen.
Yeah. And the son's the bad vibes because I don't know, like you're putting yourself in danger by traveling through Europe when there's a war going on and you're
the Dowager Empress
and there's possibility of a revolt in your own country. So you're Molly, you in danger, girl.
Yeah, the Kaiser of Germany could have easily taken her hostage, you know?
Yeah, but luckily after, 2 months, she's finally setting sail.
She finally...
getting back to Russia.
Mother Russia, motherfucker. Once Dagmar hits the scene in Russia during World War One, she goes into mama bear mode. Like we've already talked about, she's a huge part of the Red Cross there. She is setting up hospitals everywhere. Russian soldiers need that Red Cross right now. We're not really going to have time to go into it, but I mean, they were dropping. That Russia was not prepared for this war. And so she was kind of viewed almost like we're all going to die, but at least the Dowager Empress is like setting up shit for us, you know?
Yeah, right. So y'all, in case you're not aware, both of the world wars were not a good time for Russians.
No.
And a lot of people thought that they shouldn't have been in the conflict to begin with, which I kind of agree with.
Yeah.
And for reasons. Nicholas decided he wanted to be present on the battlefield with his troops because, does he have any training?
No.
So does his troops even want him there?
Bloody Nicholas? Not very much, buddy.
Was he able to stay informed of what was going on in the capital or anywhere else in the world while he was with his troops?
No, man. Alexandra was left in charge in his while he was gone. And guess who was telling her what to do?
Oh,
Rasputin. Yeah. It was bad.
It was all bad.
It was all very bad. Oh, my God. While he was gone, he left Alexandra in charge. And everyone literally went, huh?
Yeah, right. Choices.
A woman who has never at any point been popular. And also they're fighting Germany. And she's German.
Yeah, not a good idea.
I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
It's just a bad look. It's just all such a bad look.
Such a bad look. And that weird little Rasputin guy is Rasputin, during World War I, during the time after Nicholas went to go be where no one ever asked him to be, was running the show. He really was.
And God's telling me that you should do this. And he's like, well, gotta do it.
Oh, my God. Well, like, one of the things he said, it was like, if I ever get assassinated, it's going to be bad luck on your family.
That's a veiled threat.
Right?
So, yeah, this is a huge oversimplification of the beginning of the Russian Revolution. But the whole time, Dagmar, our girl, is reading the room. She's like, Alexandra, you're... creepy little Jesus dude that tells you to commit sin. You need to kick him to the curb, honey girl.
We don't love him. Yeah, she pled with Alexandra. And I have to imagine, like, Dagmar seems like a cool person, a cool, reasonable person. But we know that her relationship with her daughter-in-law was so...
tumultuous, yeah.
So for her to actually decide to, like, physically beg her, she... must have been so desperate. You know what I mean?
Oh, hun. And then in 1916, there was an attempted coup, y'all. Always time for a coup. It's a coup to overthrow Nicholas. So this was actually spearheaded by Dagmar's sister-in-law, the Grand Duchess Maria. You know, the one with all the jewels, darling.
So there's this coup going on, or this talk of a coup going on. And Dagmar has plausible deniability because there are no letters, there are no diary entries. There's nothing ever addressed directly to her, and there's nothing that she ever wrote down about it. But historians generally accept that Dagmar was involved in the coup, and she was just smart enough to not leave a paper trail. And what do you think about that?
I mean, she's obviously been like, hey, y'all, you're doing it wrong. Hey, stop. And she's begging Alexandra, so she knows there's a problem. I don't know.
I think she was involved with it, because I feel like if she wasn't involved with it, there might be letters of her writing to people being like, wait, what's going on? And the fact that there's no paper trail connecting her to the coup, I think is deliberate.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes no evidence is all the evidence you need.
Sometimes no evidence is all the evidence. Did you make that up, or is that a thing? That was so smart.
I just made it up. It just came to me.
Look at you.
But, okay, let's look at this. Okay. If it's true, though, that shows you how shitty things really must have been for her. Because she loves Nick. She knew that things had come to a fever pitch. Like, oh no. It's a guillotine season out there. Maybe we need to back off.
It smells like revolution outside. Mm-hmm. Side note. So we don't really know exactly what was planned in this would-be coup. There's one theory that says that Dagmar herself would have been instated as like an intermittent ruler in the coup. And like the inspiration was that she would just basically follow... the ruling of Catherine the Great. Like, she would look at that and be like, okay, we had a coup, and then what did Catherine the Great do? I'm just going to do that.
Huh.
If any historical fiction writers are out there, and they want to write this revisionist history novel, I would read the fuck out of that.
Me too. Around this time, there is a documented argument that she has with her son, in which he reminded her who was emperor.
Like, he yelled at her, remember who's the emperor here.
And for our girl Dagmar, we don't see this that often with her. She left that conversation in tears.
Yeah.
So, ugh. A few days later, Alexandra told Nicholas that, okay, you gotta kick your mom out, and she's gotta go because she's nothing but drama. And he did. Ugh.
When Nicholas told Dagmar that she needed to leave St. Petersburg, which they were actually now calling Petrograd, because St. Petersburg was German. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
She was already packing her bags. Also, only sunny spot in the World War One catastrophe for Dagmar of Denmark is because she's hated Germans her whole life. And now she could just fucking talk about it. And so she's leaving St. Petersburg. She's packing her bags already by the time Nicholas tells her she needs to get out. She was like, I'm telling y'all, something bad is going to happen. And so Dagmar left and she went to Kyiv, which is, you know, in modern day Ukraine. And that was the last time she ever stepped foot in Russia for the rest of her life.
Yeah. And in Kyiv, Dagmar kept doing what she'd been doing. She's working for the Red Cross, continuing to be really popular. And her daughter, you know, the one that was married to the gay guy that spent all her money, you know, Olga.
Yeah, they were both there together.
She's got her family around. They're doing it. Yeah.
In September 1916, they'd already planned a celebration for Dagmar's 50th year in Russia. But she could not come back in St. Petersburg. Like, if she did, there would be a war with Alexandra. So they did it in Kyiv. It was like a muted celebration because also they're at war. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not a good idea.
So it was just like Nicholas came down. Alexandra did not come. It's reported that the visit was very cold. Like, not a lot of hugs. Very, like, formal. In this meeting, towards the end of it, like, when he was about to go, she begged him. She was like, just at least get rid of Rasputin. He is causing so much. She's like, even here in Kyiv, people are talking about what the fuck is that dude doing? And he basically goes, ugh, Alexandra said you would tell me to do that.
And then Dagmar just flips her shit. She's like, oh my fucking God. Are you blind?
Put yourself in her shoes. Like, wouldn't you do the same thing?
Yeah, because she's like, I'm in a completely different country, and I'm hearing all of this drama about you. And it's not just Alexandra who said you'd ask me about that. It's multiple countries are asking me about this. And so I, your mother, am asking you to stop talking to this fucking man. Like, yeah, and then, yeah, after this, Nicholas just cuts his trip short. After this visit, Nicholas completely cuts off all communication. They don't talk to the entire imperial family.
So many mistakes were made. Nicholas and Alexandra are just like on an island now, basically. Yeah. They're not getting advice from anybody except for Rasputin. So 3 months later, she received a letter from her daughter, Xenia. It said, sleep, little mother. Basically be like, you're not going to rest easy after I tell you this. Sleep, little mother. The rumor is that Rasputin has been murdered. And so I don't think Dagmar wanted him dead. I don't think she wanted anyone murdered. But we have to wonder how she reacted to this news. It would have been bittersweet because on one hand, well, great, that guy's out of the picture. Problem solved. But on the other hand, how are Alexandra and Nicholas going to react to this? Are they going to come to their senses?
No.
Because it was their own family that murdered him. Are they going to, like, take even worse revenge, you know?
Yeah. And Dagmar gets a letter at this point asking her to come back to St. Petersburg. So the thinking was that with Rasputin gone, maybe Nicholas would take his mom back as his chief political advisor. But at this point, Dagmar's like, no, no, no. He's cut off all communication with us. I don't want to go.
Yeah.
So she's staying out of it. But she did write back that she thought Alexandra was losing her mind, which maybe a little bit, and that she should probably be committed to a hospital or a convent, which I mean, harsh. But
harsh, but also
Alexandra was a little loose cannon at this point.
Agreed. Let's go ahead and take a couple of minutes. Let's regroup. Let's top off our drinks. And maybe after this ad break, things will get better.
Oh, okay.
Don't Google it while we're gone.
Hey, y'all. Spooky season is here. And if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley, not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston, and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
I'm Helena Bonham Carter, and for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Secret Heroes, a new series of rarely heard tales from World War II.
They had no idea that she was Britain's top female codebreaker.
We'll hear of daring risk takers.
What she was offering to do was to ski in over the high Carpathian mountains.
Of course it was dangerous, but danger was his friend.
Subscribe to History's Secret Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. Yes. So now it's time for a very, 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 very oversimplification of a very not overly simple historical event called the Russian Revolution.
In 1917, the February Revolution took place in St. Petersburg, and Nicholas was forced to abdicate, and he was taken prisoner. And we're not going to go into, like, the deep details of that, but we're more going to focus on Dagmar's relationship to the events that happened. We're going to do some skimming and focus on Dagmar.
So when Dagmar got word that Nicholas was taken prisoner, straight
of
panic. She put her own safety out of her mind. I'm going to drop everything. She rushes to see her baby Nicholas, who was being held in modern day Belarus, which is like a 6-hour drive from Kyiv. So we don't know a whole lot about this visit. Nicholas was only held at this location for about 5 days. So we know it wasn't a long visit, but it was the last time that she'd see her son.
After this visit, Dagmar returned to Kyiv. But in the short time she was gone, the revolution had spread to Kyiv. And there had been a noticeable shift in the mood. And what is Dagmar the master of, Nathan?
Reading the fucking room.
She, like, looked around and she goes, I don't think they want me here anymore.
Yeah. And Kyiv had its own complicated relationship with the revolution, and Dagmar's presence was kind of making their own political struggles more complicated. So where she at one point felt loved and welcome, after her return from seeing her son, she felt incredibly unwelcome. Yeah. So our girl was like, okay, I get the message. Loud and clear. So Dagmar, yeah, got it. And Dagmar, her daughter Olga, and Olga's husband, GTFO, that's get the fuck out, and they went to stay with her other daughter, Xenia, in Crimea.
Dagmar lived in Crimea with an extended family of refugee Romanovs. So, we don't have time to go over who everybody was, but there was about 20 of them, give or take, living in one imperial palace. But so you also have to consider that, yeah, it's like family, and then it's pets. And then it's also maybe like one or two ladies in waiting or men servants. So it's, yes, it's a palace, but it's a packed fucking palace under distress, yes. You know? And they lived that way for about 2 years. And so they were never at any point officially under house arrest. But they also couldn't exactly, like, go wherever they wanted either. Do you know what I mean? The Bolsheviks were out there just waiting to catch them doing something incriminating. So for about 2 years, she's living with this packed fucking house of an extended family and their pets and just being stressed out.
Yeah, and I imagine it was probably stressful as fuck.
So her two remaining sons, Michael and Nicholas, were both still in Russia. And she knew she couldn't do anything to help Nicholas because he's bloody Nicholas, you know. But so she writes to her nephew, who's the King of England, and is like, I'm really worried about what's going to happen to Michael. Can you help out?
Yeah, but George V of England, her nephew, was like, ooh, it would be kind of a bad look if we rescued a Russian Grand Duke who was next in line to the throne, because they knew this situation was serious. Yeah. But they didn't think the Bolsheviks were about to really start trying to execute and exterminate the Romanovs, or, you know, maybe they do.
Spoiler alert, that's exactly what happened. And I feel like their cousin, George V, once it starts happening, probably feels really fucking guilty. Like, oh, I could have helped.
Oh, yeah.
So in 1918, basically all the Romanovs that were not either in this house that Dagmar is in or already escaped Russia were executed, were brutally murdered.
Yeah, because, ugh, here we go again. Poor little Dagmar, because in June of 1918, her son Michael was executed. And in July, a month later, Nicholas and his entire family were executed.
And we go into that execution in our Maria Fyodorovna episode. Oh my God. I think about that.
It's that is my terrible. Roman Empire. Terrible. Oh.
I think about it. Because the daughters were told to sew their jewels into their corsets. It acted as like a bulletproof vest when they were shot. It just ricocheted off of them. Oh my God.
And so when Dagmar was told, she was basically like, wait, what? Wait, no. Did you see them killed? Did anybody actually witness these murders? Did you find any of the bodies? No? Okay. Then you don't know that for sure, which probably fueled the rumors for Anastasia, because Dagmar was probably in denial and pretending that it didn't happen, and that just fueled things.
What a delusional, beautiful state. I aspire to one day access that level of delusion. She wrote in her diary that she believed the Bolsheviks exiled the family from Russia and were just spreading the rumor that they had been murdered so no one would try to go find them. Yeah. And that was her opinion for the rest of her life. And it was a wrong opinion. But, I mean, can you blame her?
No. She's traumatized. She's lost so many family members. She's pretending that it didn't happen. But
bless her.
After the murders of the Romanovs, her nephew over in England was like, oh, fuck. Okay.
Oopsie-daisy.
We'll help you now. And he sent over a boat on ye old boat road. And Dagmar was like, okay, all aboard.
Choo-choo.
Wait, a boat does kind of go choo-choo. It's more of a honk honk. Wait, can you do that one more time?
Brrr. What sound boats make. Shut up.
Okay.
So the captain of this boat was like, oh no. Oh, I cannot hold everybody and their pets. I was sent to like get you, get your daughters, get your grandkids. That's all I was sent here for. And Dagmar's like, you're telling me that we know the Bolsheviks are out here literally hunting Romanovs. Like, it's the fucking purge.
Mm-hmm.
It's the purge, and you want me to just leave these people that I may not even like all that much? Absolutely not. And I think that shows such an interesting part of her character, that she was like, she could have just been like, oh, just room for me and my daughter? But no, I'm not leaving them here.
They loaded the entire extended family, despite all the OSHA violations, and including all of the kitty cats and dogs and pets that came on the damn boat. And then everyone gets the fuck out and heads to London.
Dagmar was worried about life in London. She didn't want to be the center of gossip.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want to be like the center of speculation and pity. She knew that people would comment on, oh, the stress has aged her. Which, yeah, I'm sure the stress did hate. She's been beautiful her entire life, and now she's starting to actually feel old. Even back then, we talk about this in our Georgiana Duchess
Cavendish.
Cavendish episodes. So even before that, how ugly the press was in London. So she's stressed out about that everyone's going to be talking about how aged she looks, because I'm sure she's aged through this. Which, look, the press. Oh, my God. One, misogyny.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people aren't saying that about men. Don't really have to be worried about that. And two, yeah, you know what? I bet it has aged her. 2 years living with all those randos.
And she's not a young spring chick anymore. So the fuck what? She got some goddamn wrinkles. Shut your mouth.
Women age. God damn it.
Wrinkles are beautiful. It's a map to your fucking love. I hate it. Anyway, the British royal court was a lot like the Russian one. And if she's going to be living there, she's going to be expected to be public, go to state dinners, be on display. And for the first time, being seen and going out was literally the last thing she wanted to do. But can you blame her?
Not at all. Jeez. She also didn't want to live off of charity.
Yeah.
But what choice do you have? It's not like she can go get a job. She brought some of her jewels with her. But besides that, besides selling those, how else would she have an income? So she had no way to make money in London, and that stressed her out as well.
Yeah, so she settled in with her sister. But sadly, Sister Alex's mental health was already not great. And now it's still... It's worse, y'all. It's just worse.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Dagmar also wasn't the picture of perfect mental health.
Would you be?
No, no. Everybody's out to kill you. And so these two sisters who loved each other very much just could not live together anymore.
Yeah.
They were arguing all the time. Dagmar was like, oh my God, I love you with all of my heart, but I just can't live this way anymore.
If you're Dagmar, where do you go in this situation? Where can you go that's quieter and the royal court isn't so invasive?
Ooh, I know. Denmark.
You know, her and her sister bought that house all those years ago. It's far away from Russia, so, like, no one can come and try to, like, imprison her or anything. She's got a safe haven there. And also, she's got money there, a bit from her nephew being the king. So she's just like, yeah, I'm heading home. She heads home.
And Dagmar of Denmark arrived back into Denmark when she was about 72 years old. And she moved into the house that she and her sister Alexandra had bought together about 20 years prior. So her daughter Olga and her family lived nearby. And her daughter Xenia would come and visit several times a year. So at least she still had that connection with her family.
Yeah. And there was also quite a few Russian refugees that ended up in Denmark as well. So there was a community, which is cool. So Dagmar wasn't a perfect person. And I thought about leaving this out of the outline. But also, I think it's interesting. I think it's important that you paint the picture, whether it positive or negative. So remember how her daughter Olga divorced and married a commoner?
Yeah.
So her daughter Olga and her husband and her kids with the husband were living with her, and she liked to remind the kids kind of all the time that they were not royalty like her other grandkids. I know. But also we have to think about, like, her mental state was probably deteriorating as well.
Yeah, and at this point, she's like, you haven't been through what we went through, and I had to leave this country, and I was hunted down. Yeah. So I'm sure there's a little bit of that in there, where it's like, you'll never understand.
My other grandkids were killed, and
exactly. Yeah, so
I don't love that part of her personality, but I also didn't want to leave it out, because I feel like we should talk about all aspects.
All of it, yeah. So yeah. Dagmar continued to spend time on charities and still loved attending, you know, the occasional society events in Denmark. Because, like, she's still at heart a very, very outgoing, loving party girl. Like, she just wants to be around people.
You can't take the Sagittarius out of her.
No, you can't.
She's a fire sign.
Even though the world has put her through shit, she still is this fun-loving person at heart.
Yes. So Dagmar of Denmark, a.k.a. Maria Fyodorovna, Tsarina of Russia, lived to be 80 years old. She outlived all three of her sons, which is very sad. Yeah. So after a very full and eventful life, she died at her home in Denmark with both of her daughters by her side. Her last wish was to be buried next to her husband in St. Petersburg, which they were like, Mom.
Not you're
how are we gonna
you're
do
really
that?
Good at reading the room, but not for this.
Not for this. How are we gonna do that? And that obviously, in the 1920s isn't something that could have happened. So she was buried next to her mother and father.
However, in 2005, she got her wish. So her remains were moved, and she is now next to her husband, Sasha Fierce.
And that is the life of Dagmar of Denmark. I honestly, when I first started researching her, thought this was going to be one episode. But I'm glad we took the time to, like, really get to know her.
Yeah. Love, love, love her. She was a fierce, outgoing woman who also had to stand up to a lot of shit that was thrown her way.
Faux show. So everybody, please raise a glass to Dagmar of Denmark, Empress of Russia.
Cheers, bitches.
Have you ever wished that you had a direct line to your pediatrician to ask all the questions that constantly crop up while parenting? We sure have. That's why we launched the Bites of Health podcast. Every morning, we'll answer a commonly asked pediatric question in 5 minutes or less. You can tune in while you're making your second cup of coffee or from the school drop-off line. So be sure to tune in to Bites of Health, streaming now.